The American Medical Association recently announced that it was taking a stand against image manipulation in advertising, stating that alterations made through processes like Photoshop can contribute to unrealistic body image expectations, eating disorders, and other emotional problems. The AMA is just beginning to raise public awareness about the impact of image manipulation on childhood development. And I'd like for all of us to reflect on the way in which unrealistic imagery may serve as a contributor to adolescent health problems. This hour of the program, Jean Kilburn, lecturer, media critic, and author. She is also co-author of So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. Some of this photoshopping is really quite amazing what they can do, and it's so unrealistic that parts of the body that are supposed to be smaller than other parts of the body are actually larger because it's supposed to, according to somebody's view of beauty, look beautiful. Kate Winslet and Bad Brad Pitt are making their own statements with this. Winslet was one of the first to break ground, and not too many others have done this because a lot of people want to look, quote, better than they really look. So she took action against GQ for digitally altering her body and its photographs. Those photographs she thought made her look unrealistically thin. And Brad Pitt wanted no retouching on the magazine cover of W. He selected a photographer known for his extremely detailed portraits that expose skin flaws. Most people, of course, think about losing weight, removing their pounds and wrinkles, and some celebrities even say that this is something that has to happen when they have pictures taken. But more and more are seeing Photoshop as dangerous terrain. Jean Kilburn is our guest this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hi, Jean. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's great to be with you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. Thank you. Yeah. We'll have a good conversation. Tell me, when did the AMA make this statement, and was it a statement that should have been made a long time ago, but at least they finally made it?
Well, they made it fairly recently. I'm not sure exactly what the date was, but of course, I think it should have been made a long time ago, but I'm absolutely delighted that they made it. It seems like quite a almost a radical step in a way for the AMA, which is often, you know, fairly conservative organization. So I think this is it's of course exciting to me since I started talking about this about 35 years ago, long before Photoshop. But I did talk about the, you know, the ideal image of beauty and how impossible it was, and how much pressure it put on women and girls and that sort of thing.
And what did the AMA say, and what do you know about the impact of this image manipulation on the development of children, particularly young girls?
Well, I think it's difficult to do sort of absolutely hardcore gold standard research on this, but there does seem to be evidence that these images, these kinds of unrealistic images, affect self-esteem, and they lead to a sort of unrealistic expectations and therefore sort of depression. They sometimes encourage eating disorders as girls and women sort of starve themselves in an attempt to achieve an impossible ideal. And so there is some evidence that these images are very harmful, and not just the photoshopped images, but that sexualized images in general contribute to the three most common sort of forms of mental health problems for women and girls, which are depression and low self-esteem and eating disorders.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought, I'm getting old now, but I would have thought as I look at girls' soccer, as I look at sports that young women are participating in now and how that really wasn't a part of my generation at all, that everything would have changed. That because women are thought of as athletic and they can compete with the best of them, and that athletic build would be something to emulate, that we were in a new era.
Well, in some ways we are in a new era, but it's actually kind of ironic because there are expanded opportunities for girls in many ways, and for women there certainly is a sort of emphasis on sports and opportunities for sports that, you know, I didn't have growing up either. But at the same time, the pressure on girls to look a certain way has never been worse. It's starting earlier and earlier all the time. So even very little girls are getting the message that it's all about their appearance, that it's how they look that's most important, that their bodies are, you know, primarily decorative, that they need to be very thin, they need to be perfect looking. So it is sad that at a time of possible, you know, expansion, that there is this narrowing in terms of what girls are really offered as what's most important.
Maybe it would be a good idea for us to be able to lead our lives backward, huh?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I think that, in knowing what we know now.
Right.
But certainly, I mean, the good news is, you know, I started talking about this, as I said, I think I was, in fact, I'm sure I was the first person to start looking at the image of women in advertising way back in the 60s. And I made my first film, Killing Us Softly, Advertising's Image of Women, way back in 1979. And part of that, in that film, I talked about the tyranny of the ideal image of beauty and the sexualization of little girls, and that's just gotten so much worse. However, what's gotten better is that there's a lot more attention being paid to these issues now. I mean, I couldn't have dreamed back in 1979 that the AMA would ever come out with something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I recently updated Killing Us Softly. I've done it three times, but the new version, Killing Us Softly 4, I showed at Parliament in June because an MP in Parliament, Joe Swinson, has introduced legislation against Photoshop, which is amazing and, you know, very, I think, very important, but also something that I wouldn't have been able to even imagine when I started out. So that's the kind of thing that people often ask me, what gives you hope? You've been doing this for so long. And what gives me hope is that there are signs of progress and that more and more people are involved. There's many more organizations and books and articles and films and all kinds of things. And there's research that's being done that actually proves that these images are harmful. That, mm-hmm. So that's all, to me, is very exciting.
I have noticed, and tell me if this is just a natural expression of feeling comfortable with their bodies or if it's something else, just from observation, and I've talked with my friends and we're of an older generation now, about the amount of skin and flesh that a lot of young women expose these days, as though the body parts are right there for everybody to see. And I can't remember that when I was growing up.
No, nor can I. It absolutely didn't happen when we were growing up. But I think that some people interpret that as a sign that, you know, young women are more comfortable with their bodies or that this is some sort of symbol of liberation or empowerment. And I think that that's unfortunate because I don't think that's really the case. I certainly think that women should be able to dress any way they want, but there's such pressure on girls today and young women today to emulate the porn stars and the strippers and to dress in a way that's really very... very much out of the world of pornography, and
oh my.
And that there's no, there aren't a lot of options. So it's not as if this is one choice among many. It's as if this is the definition of what it means to be hot and sexy,
oh.
And this is how you have to look. And if you don't look this way, then you're not acceptable. So it's another kind of conformity, and it's one that I think actually does not make most young women feel comfortable with their bodies.
How did that happen, Jean?
Well, my theory is that the market will co-opt any kind of movement for change, for really real social change. So, for example, with the second wave of feminism in the 70s or the late 60s and 70s, we got Virginia Slims, you know, you've come a long way, baby. And so liberation for women became, you know, you can smoke like a man. And that often happens. And so I think that this has been a sort of co-opting of some of the goals of sort of girl power or of empowering girls and women that, well, you know, if a marketer primarily wants to be able to sell stuff, so how can we turn this into another way to sell them stuff? And in this case, it's a way of saying this, well, then everything, what's most important is how you look and you need to dress a certain way and you need to buy this stuff. And so it's a kind of perversion of the actual goals of liberation and empowerment for girls and young women.
Let's spend more time on this eating because it continues to be a problem. And you cite figures of the number of young girls, and we're talking very, very young girls between the ages of 3 and 6 or a little older than that, who are concerned that they are fat, if you can believe you're even thinking about that when you're that young, and those who are on diets when their bodies are just growing.
Right, and that's been something that's been incredibly alarming. I mean, we've been dealing with eating disorders, of course, for quite some time, and with teenage girls and women of all ages suffering from this. But what's new is that this is starting so early, and that very, very little girls, you're right, 3, 4, 5 years old are worried about being fat. When they're still, they have chubby little bodies because they're supposed to. It's crazy to sort of be putting for these little girls to be feeling this kind of pressure. And, of course, it can set them up for lifelong problems with eating.
We're going to
Excuse me for one second, but one of the problems, I think, is that because there's such pressure on women to be incredibly thin and all of that, that a lot of very little girls hear their mothers talking about this all the time and see their mothers going on diets and see their mothers doing a whole lot of negative self-talk when they look in the mirror. And so that's why one of the things that I really urge all women to do, but particularly mothers, is just do not do all this negative self-talk. Ideally ever, but particularly if there's a little girl around, because it really has an impact on how little girls feel.
Yeah. Moving to, before we go to phone calls, the issue of photoshopping. Tell me how it is being used in a detrimental fashion, and actually tell me how extensively it is being used. I guess I'm not as in tune with covers as I should be to understand this phenomenon. There's your puppy. Hello, buddy.
Yeah, that's all right. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I love dogs.
My little dog. I will get into a quieter spot here. Photoshop has been, the airbrushing has been used for a really long time to create, and cosmetics and all of that have been used for a really long time to create ideal images. But Photoshop takes it to a whole other level so that it's a very different than it's ever been before. Photoshop is able to not only make people absolutely perfect, but they're able to, it's able to put somebody else's head on someone else's body, or to take different body parts and move them around, or to make thighs thinner, or whittle the waist down. So it can do all kinds of things that weren't possible before the advent of computers and Photoshop. So therefore, the images that we see are, they've always been unrealistic, but they're completely unrealistic, completely artificial, and really just constructed. They have nothing to do with what human beings really can look like.
And so how important is it, and the second part of the question is why there aren't more people like Brad Pitt and Kate Winslet who are saying, hey, photograph me as I am. I don't want to be represented as being excessively thin or with a flawless face.
Yeah, and bless them, by the way. And Kate was really the first. I mean, she was just outspoken about that. She said, I don't look like this. When they sort of whittled down her thighs, I don't look like this, and I don't desire to look like this. So it was fabulous. And, I applaud Brad Pitt for doing that, too. But I think it does take some courage in a way for celebrities to do it, because the flip side of the sort of adoration of these gorgeous celebrities is the extraordinary contempt that's heaped on them if they're not perfect, if they gain weight, for example, or for women as women age, that terrible. So all these photographs now that are all over the internet, if a celebrity's caught without her makeup or having gained a few pounds or being pregnant for that matter, so or not losing the baby weight within 3 days.
Yes.
So there's such pressure on them that I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to do this, to say, all right, then I'm not going to be retouched, or I'm not going to be retouched very much. Jamie Lee Curtis did this a few years ago, too, in More magazine. She actually allowed herself to be photographed in her underwear without being retouched, and then she next to it ran a glamorous shot, you know, that was retouched. And she was the first, I think, to actually do that. And it was very courageous and made it a big, big impact. So I applaud them for doing it, but I understand the hesitation on the parts of many of them.
We go to phone calls and emails in just a moment. Jean Kilburn is our guest this hour, lecturer, media critic, co-author of So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. She's also made the film Killing Me Softly, which and she's done, I believe she said, four versions of that now as well. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's start with an email from Deanna in Milwaukee. One of the many postcards we've received this summer from local photographers advertising their services for high school senior portraits offered digital body sculpting. I was very surprised to see this service directly marketed to teens, but I guess I shouldn't have been.
That's heartbreaking. I mean, it's not surprising, I guess. And I imagine that they're, you know, that a lot of the teens are going to be very, very much wanting to take advantage of this. But oh, what a sad commentary that we need, that we're expecting that or offering that to our teenagers now,
right,
too.
Yeah. Jeremy in the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Hi.
I would just like to bring up a point of, you know, stylization of body type has been going on for centuries. Greek sculpture, you know, unnatural poses that could be very uncomfortable to hold while sculpting a marble statue. And isn't it an artistic choice to be able to, you know, offer a surrealistic body type?
Well,
that's all.
Okay, thanks for the call.
I think that there's a world of difference between a Greek sculpture and the kind of mass technology that we have that enables us to be surrounded and flooded by these images of this particular idealized body type. It's also for women, there's only one body type that's considered acceptable or desirable. It's the ultra-thin body type. The models are very tall. They're very thin. There's nothing wrong with this body type. It's just that fewer than 5% of American women have it. But there's a world of difference between a body in a painting, let's say, or in a sculpture, and these images surrounding us, so we're exposed to thousands and thousands of them all the time, used to sell us stuff. I just think that that's a very different phenomenon than the use of an idealized body type in art.
Let's
but I don't see advertising as art. I mean, I guess some people do, but I don't.
How does the AMA plan to raise public awareness about all of this? Are they going to do public service announcements? Are they going to start to get congressional movement to ban Photoshop or what?
Well, you know, I'm afraid I don't know. I know that they've taken the step of saying that this is a serious issue. I'm not sure what their plans are for how they're going to promote it. I would imagine public service announcements might be part of it. As I said, in the UK, there is some legislation that bans extreme versions of Photoshop, or not Photoshop itself, but the extremely Photoshopped images. But whether that, I frankly can't even imagine that happening here.
Do you think it should?
Well, I don't think it's, yes, probably so, although I think it is hard to determine what the line is exactly. I mean, all of the photographs, of course, are retouched, and to what extent, at what point do we say this is too much? So I'm, rather than legislation, although I certainly wouldn't oppose it, I'm actually more in favor of education, of teaching media literacy in our schools so that kids grow up knowing that these images are artificial and constructed. And you may think that they already do, but in fact, most people really don't, or they don't know the extent to which they're artificial and constructed. So teaching media literacy would help our kids to become critical viewers, and that in turn, I think, might influence the advertisers.
Yeah. Dan in Beloit. Hi, Dan.
Hello. first of all, if I could start out, I think the comment that the other gentleman made about the Greek sculptures is kind of an ignorant comment based on the discussion at hand as to how it's affecting children. This isn't about art or sculpture. It's about how it's affecting the generation coming up, too. The second thought that I have is I think that the media and what they're portraying and all that, there's a big difference between healthy and skinny, and they're mixing that up. There's healthy, and then there's super skinny, and they're putting out there that super skinny is healthy when it's not. I'm a bodybuilder part-time. I don't really get in the gym all the time like a lot of my buddies do. But, you know, I see a lot of starvation diets trying to, you know, starve themselves for a week at a time, trying to get down to a certain body fat weight, you know, whether they want 5 or 6% body fat. I don't think that it's just not healthy what they're portraying, and they get that from magazines. On top of that, for women, I don't think, you know, women try and get, you know, how you dress is what you get in my eyes, and I think modesty is very sexy in comparison to showing everything. You know, leave a little bit for the imagination, you know, and they don't, you know, I think you'll get a better man, to be honest, if that's what you're out hunting for. if you dress for success, you know, if you don't, you know, you know, otherwise you're just going to end up with a fake relationship in my eyes. You know, you're going to get some guy who, you know, is looking for this hot body, and as soon as you lose it, guess what? You're out the door, you know, so.
Yeah, he's lost his too, so. All right, Gene.
Well, a lot of points there. I'll start with the last one. I mean, just sort of, it makes me nervous that sort of how you dress is what you get, because that to me comes perilously close to saying that women invite sexual harassment or sexual assault. And, you know, that's been proven time and again that that's just not the case. So, you know, in terms of the kind of man you'll attract, I think maybe that could be true not only for how one dresses, but if one is, you know, attracting a man who's simply interested in how one looks, then that is going to be a recipe for trouble. The second point about healthy not being skinny, I think is also true, and it's very difficult to talk about this sometimes, because if you talk about the extreme emphasis on extreme thinness for women and girls, people these days often come back and say, oh, well, but the real problem is obesity, as if this was the choice, you know. You're either unbelievably thin or you're obese. And, of course, that's just not true. And also the emphasis on extreme thinness in some ways actually contributes to obesity, because it leads to yo-yo dieting, and that's a sort of a way to gain weight. So that it's a complicated issue, but it's you're absolutely right about that. And I'm afraid I've didn't quite understand or don't remember the first point.
That's a note. Those were good responses and a good call. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Frank in Madison. Hey, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Sounds like a good holiday. I would ask your guest if the Photoshop issue is, and I'm sure she's quite authoritative on this, a specific problem, part of a larger one, which is the misrepresentation of reality, that there's a commercial motivation behind this. If you generate a degree of insecurity, you have something to sell to the individuals who are unsure of themselves, and that there's a long-term cultural shift away from character being what is important towards this narcissistic personality and culture, where who you are is limited to your body. And, you know, the classical world was against that, even if they had those marvelous statues. And the Protestant ethos condemned it, you know, as a form of narcissism and as a vice. You are what you are to your friends and in your society, not how you look. So thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Great call as always.
Very well put, all of that. I mean, I would certainly agree that with that there is this, and that at the heart of a lot of advertising is the need to make people feel insecure and incomplete and not good enough, so that therefore one needs, you know, to buy all this stuff in order to feel okay. So that's certainly true. And it's also a point you made, Frank, sort of about the idealized art sculpture, for example, Greek sculpture things. The people weren't expected to look like that. I mean, it was obviously an idealized image, and there were loftier goals. I mean, it wasn't as if here's the ideal image, and you need to look like this, or you're a worthless person. So those your points were very well made.
Mm-hmm. Jesse in Turtle Lake, hi.
Hello, I noticed your guest this morning used the phrase "to make them look perfect," which there really is no perfect when it comes to a human body. And we need some sort of modifier before perfect, because this advertisement perfect is an artificial perfect or a false perfect.
Yeah, if one could use quotes sort of on the radio, I guess I could have done that. I mean, I thought that, you know, what I mean is that Photoshop is able to create, for example, skin that is absolutely flawless, that has no pores, God, or certainly no lines, no blemishes, no spots, but no pores. I mean, so it's perfect in that sense, flawless. But, you know, I wasn't implying that I thought it was actually perfect.
Right. Let's talk about makeup for a moment and some of the claims that are made about foundations or mascara or those. A lot of those are really Photoshopped heavily, aren't they? And how can you make claims to this mascara making you look like this, or this foundation making you look like this, when what you're seeing is an image that has been altered?
Well, that's a very good point. And in fact, that was one of the reasons that L'Oreal ad in the UK was banned recently, because it made a claim that this was how you could look if you used this particular foundation. But of course, I mean, that just wasn't true. But it was a Photoshopped image. But that's always the case. And I think what they do, the way they get away with it, is they can do tests and that sort of thing where there's a microscopic difference. I mean, nothing that could ever be seen with the naked eye, but maybe under a microscope, you know, the skin might look a little better or a little smoother or something like that. So therefore, that means that they can legally sort of claim that this makes a difference, but it's not actually a difference that anybody would ever see. And on the one hand, you know, we're not stupid. We know that this stuff isn't really going to make us look like that. I mean, my favorites are the anti-aging creams that, and the
oh my gosh,
22,
yes.
You know,
yes.
And as if we're going to, you know, put on this cream and it's going to make us look 22 again. We know that, you know, that that's not going to happen. But boy, when we're so surrounded by these images, and when that's the only image of beauty that we ever see, it's hard not to feel sort of not okay and somewhat depressed, and as if, oh, well, maybe I should try this. It might make some difference.
Yeah, I've tried some of those. It's hard not to succumb to those, isn't it?
Right.
I've tried some of those they make your skin a little softer, I guess. But as for those wrinkles, they're still there. Yeah, and it must be a multi-billion-dollar industry with all the baby boomers getting older, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is, and of course, not just the those kinds of products, but also, of course, Botox and surgery and all kinds of things like that. Which actually, of course, I mean, they do work to remove wrinkles, but you know, it's quite costly in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, how many people have that done now? Do you know that?
It's millions. I mean, it's
is it.
It's extremely, extremely popular. And a lot of very young women are actually using Botox because they've been told that if they start when they're very young, the wrinkles won't develop. So they're using it
really?
As a preventive kind of thing, right. And, of course, the thing about it is that it lasts, you know, a few months at best, and then you have to do it over again, and it's very expensive, and who knows, you know, about the long-term effects and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of actresses are running into trouble because it makes it impossible to have for their faces to be very expressive. And of
right.
course, you know, if you're an actress, you need to be able to have expressions on your face. So they're in a real double bind. I mean, the culture says they have to stay looking very, very young, but if they freeze their faces, they're not going to be able to act. way.
Right. Emma in Menominee. Hi, Emma. Emma, are you there? I don't know what the heck's going on with you, Emma, but we'll give you a chance to get to your phone. Tim in Ladysmith. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Excellent program. I really think, unfortunately, we're going to have to look quite a bit deeper, though, than your guest is talking. I appreciate you talking about this and at least raising the question, because it seems to me up until about the 1960s, we did have a thing called censorship in this country, where we censored words that were said and we censored images. And we thought, you know, things that were not appropriate for the public had some censorship. And I don't know where freedom of speech has gone to the point where it means freedom to do anything you want, anytime you want, regardless of the consequences. And until we bring back censorship, I mean, one of the hypocrisies that really strange in this country is we censor cigarette advertising because we see that it's bad for people. I don't know why we can't do the same thing with explicit images and things like your guest is talking about, because frankly, that's the only way we're going to change this, excuse me, is if we begin to censor the images and call things inappropriate that are, which goes to a vast array of things. So thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Jean.
Well, I'm not a fan of censorship, never have been. I think mainly because I, you know, never trust who the censors are going to be. I don't think we actually had censorship in the past so much as we had guidelines and norms and standards and that sort of thing, and that's what's slipping. And I think we certainly need much more consumer protection. We, it's only recently that we've had a consumer. The consumer agencies have had any power restored to them, so that's one thing. And I do think that we can have lots of guidelines and about what's appropriate and what isn't appropriate, and that they should be there should be standards. But in terms of censoring things, I maybe it's just the word. I think I just really don't like. And in terms of free speech, I mean, absolutely, you know. Obviously, love free speech, but my big problem is that this latest sort of belief that corporations are like individuals and have the same rights as individuals, and therefore that all commercial speech is protected in the same way that our free speech is protected, and I don't think that's legitimate.
Have there been, we were talking about Kate Winslet and Brad Pitt's earlier, I want to talk more about the importance of people who are very well known, aging as people age and being appropriate with what they wear, et cetera. Are we overestimating the influence of those people or underestimating them? And should more come public and it would change things significantly?
I think it would change things significantly, and not only for more the actual celebrities to be able to do that, but also just for the images in general. And there is a huge double standard of aging for women and men. We do have we do allow men to age to a great extent. You know, there's the handsome or the distinguished, mature, older man with the gray hair and the wrinkles, and he's still considered sexy and attractive, you know, Clint Eastwood or Robert Redford, et cetera. Whereas for women, the standard of beauty is staying looking very, very young. So we consider older women to be attractive or beautiful only insofar as they stay looking as if they're
yes.
much, much younger.
Right.
And that's really the problem, because if we were to see many, many, many more images of women of a certain age who looked their age, you know, and yet were still considered sexy and beautiful, that would make a huge difference, I think, because I think that this way in which women are basically not allowed to age or get the message that we're less valuable as we age does enormous psychic harm to women. And so it would be wonderful. But again, it would take enormous courage on the part of celebrities to do this, because the contempt that is heaped on them is not trivial, you know.
Yeah, no, it sure isn't. I agree with you. It's much harder for women to get older. Let us go next to Jeanette in Madison. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi. Thanks for letting me join your program this morning. I'm the parent of two girls. They're 11 and 7. And even just yesterday, I was talking with them about sort of what kind of images we see and what connotes a boy or a girl. And I have to say that even just for my 7-year-old, trying to find clothes that are somewhat don't have all the frills or things that just aren't appropriate for that age are really tricky, and sort of navigating those conversations with our children are really important things to do now. And so I just wanted to mention that and hear what Jean has to say about that. I also wanted to let you know that I work for the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association, and Kathleen, I think that you are going to be interviewing a guest that we're having come to Madison, Diane Levin, which I think you had just mentioned her earlier as well. She's going to be in Madison September 22nd through the 24th talking to both parents as well as caregivers about the importance of sort of this generalization of sexiness so early in life and how it impacts our young girls and our young boys as well.
Yeah, great. Let's go back to your 7-year-old for a moment. Do you think that she has a very different idea of what's appropriate for her, and is she attracted to those frilly things or low-cut or sexualized outfits or not?
Well, what's interesting is actually our 11-year-old is much more interested in that, and our 7-year-old is absolutely not interested in that and finds that she would prefer to even find clothes that are made for boys because they seem more comfortable to her, not so much because actually much more because they aren't low cut. They don't have frills on them. She can't find things in a girl section that feels most comfortable to her as a 7-year-old.
She's wise. I mean, the truth is that a lot of these sexy little clothes for little girls are not comfortable at all, and they really impede their ability to play and to run. And I mean, very little girls now are wearing heels on their shoes.
You know, oh, my gosh.
High heels, but heels. And that certainly makes it harder for them to play. So that's very good. Before I forget, let me just say that Diane Levin is my co-author on So Sexy, So Soon.
Yes.
Our book, So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. So it's great that she's going to be in Madison, and I know, Kathleen, she'll be on your show in September, too, but she and I wrote that book together.
Well, and that's great, Jean. I'm sorry that I didn't even...
There's a So Sexy, So Soon website where there's a resource and all kinds of things, too.
All right, we were hearing two people at once. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I was just saying to Jean, I didn't realize she was the co-author, and it's such an important piece of work, and we're so excited that Diane can come and not only speak with our caregivers who work with young children, but also have an opportunity to have that important dialogue with parents about what they can do and how to have those conversations with their young children.
Yeah.
And Jeanette, it's bravo to you for having the conversations, because the single most important thing parents can do is to talk to their kids, and starting really early, about all of these issues, and to listen to them and to sort of ask their opinions about these things, and also to convey your values, you know, over and over again about, you know, for example, even with your 11-year-old, if she wants very sexy clothes, and she probably does because her peers do, you know, to sort of just talk about why you feel that's inappropriate for her,
but
find out also what she likes about it and what she thinks she'll get from wearing, you know, that sort of thing. Just have the dialogue. That's just so important.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
We just need to start a movement that it's really cool to be a nerd. Don't you think, Jean? I mean, really. Really?
Well, there are some movements, speaking of movements, that have been started. One is a wonderful organization called Spark, which is protesting the sexualization of girls, and it's got a lot of girls involved as well. And so that's something that people can Google and look up, Spark. And then there's another whole movement called Endangered Species Women, which is trying to do something about the whole eating disorders, emphasis on thinness sort of thing. So as I said, the good news is there is a lot happening. There's a lot of protest, a lot of people resisting this kind of thing. And you're right that we do need it. It needs to be a movement. It needs to be a critical mass of people saying, you know, enough. You know, we've had enough. We're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to take this anymore.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Jeanette, so much for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Jean Kilburn is our guest. Our conversation about photoshopping and media presentation of what's true and it isn't. What is true is our conversation this hour, prompted by the American Medical Association announcing it was taking a stand against image manipulation in advertising like Photoshop, that it can have a harmful effect, particularly on young people, young girls, and serve as a contributor to adolescent health problems. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Brad in Eau Claire. Hi, Brad.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I would take somewhat of an issue. I'm really questioning what Photoshop has really, effect it's really had. In fact, I think it's had almost an opposite effect. I can see the clothing where the media has portrayed and got scantily clothed girls. But as far as body types, I don't think our female population starting at 5-year-olds to 6-year-olds has ever been heavier.
Okay, that's a good point. There is a lot of obesity that's not very healthy in this country as well. It's kind of a dichotomy, isn't it, Jane?
Well, it really isn't. I mean, people, it's so frustrating because every time one talks about the fact that the obsession with thinness and the extreme emphasis on thinness for girls and women starting at a very early age really does cause enormous harm, and it leads to eating disorders and that sort of thing, a lot of people sort of feel like, oh, well, better that our girls starve themselves than that they be obese. And as if that were the only choice, you know, as if we're talking about one or the other. Whereas obviously, you know, what we're talking about is that there's a wide range of ways for bodies to be healthy and fit. And there, including, by the way, it's possible to be fat and fit, too, although a lot of people don't realize that. And it's certainly possible to be skinny and extremely unhealthy and unfit. So it's what we're arguing for really is a much more realistic range of body types to be shown throughout the media so that girls and women don't get the message that if they're not built like these models, and again, about 3 or 4% of the population is, that they're somehow unattractive and undesirable, and that the emphasis shouldn't be on trying to, you know, look a certain way, but rather on being as healthy as you can be and as fit as you can be for your particular body type, because it feels good and because it gives you more energy, not because you're going to be sexier or, you know, be able to fit into a size 00 dress.
Brad?
Well, I don't know if you have any teenage daughters that have been in high school lately, Gene, but I have two teenage daughters, one to graduate and one 16, and I would say there's maybe 1% of the girls' population that are, I would consider, too thin. 70% of them, I think, are on the verge of being overweight or obese. They're obviously wearing some clothes they maybe are ill-fitting or maybe shouldn't be in, but I don't see skinny girls in the high school.
A question of seeing skinny girls. I mean, it's kind of a complicated issue, but I certainly agree with you. I mean, we have a big problem with people being overweight in this country, and there are lots of reasons for that. That could be a subject of a whole other program. But that the solution to that problem isn't to have an idealized image of extreme thinness for girls and women that leads them to try to starve themselves in order to achieve it. That doesn't help with the overweight issue. In fact, if anything, dieting tends to make people fat because dieting, inevitably you deprive yourself, and then almost always a diet ends with a binge, so that 95% of all dieters not only regain whatever weight they lose, they go on to gain more. So the emphasis in the country on you have to look a certain way and therefore you need to diet in order to look that way, and then you try the diet and of course no diet works and then you gain weight and then you give up, is really part of the problem. What we should be arguing for instead is a, you know, transformation of the way that we eat and the way that we exercise and a much greater acceptance of different body types so that to a recognition that there are many, many ways that many different body types, and all of which can be attractive and healthy, but the way to achieve it is by changing the way that we eat and the way that we exercise, not by dieting. You know, that's just not the answer.
Thanks, Brad. Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Jean. I'm a 56-year-old woman. I have daughters and granddaughters, and I don't believe it's up to any celebrity to impress upon my daughter or daughters or granddaughters what it is to be a woman. I think that, I believe, that my generation was trivialized. We weren't liberated. We were liberated to be manipulated by the ad agencies. I chose to practice the art and craft of homemaking, and I have been ridiculed for being too intelligent for that. And that's pathetic. And I'm proud of what I do. I don't take that lying down. And I have a daughter who is a professional, outside the home, and she's expected to keep up the home. And I have a daughter who she stays home with her kids, and she does what she does. And they are both valuable, equally valuable citizens. You cannot legislate common sense, and we've lost it. We've lost common sense.
Jean.
Well, I don't sort of know where to start. I mean, I think we've lost common sense in a whole lot of arenas, but I'm sorry to hear that you were ridiculed. I don't know who ridiculed you. I mean, certainly, my belief has always been all about choice and options, you know, not dictating one way or another for people to live their lives. So I'm not sure, I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm not sure who did the ridiculing, but I know that that's certainly not, that's not feminism's point of view, if there is such a thing, and it's certainly not my point of view. You know, we should all, men and women, have a wide range of choices. You know, that's what it's all about.
Thank you, Lynn. Patty in the Fox Cities. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that recently they had the ESPY Awards on, and I don't know if they give any type of award for advertising that's used. I didn't watch the ceremony, but one of my recent, they get the grand prize, is an advertisement that a sporting goods store in Wisconsin called Shields has been running. And there's no voiceover during the commercial, just a little bit of music, and it's women that are involved in all of these different sports areas, and it's just showing little 5-second snippets of them. These are healthy women of all age groups participating and doing something they love and truly enjoy. I mean, you can see that in just the way that it's put together, and it's so inspiring, and it's healthy women, and it just really, that's what we need to get out in front of young girls, to show them how empowering that is and how beautiful women are that are healthy. And, you know, this whole photoshopping crap, it's just, I don't like that. Everything I look at in print form, to me, is suspect.
Hmm.
Well, it absolutely is suspect. I mean, you never will see an image of a woman considered beautiful in print, you know, in an ad, for example, that hasn't been photoshopped. I mean, that just doesn't happen. But that's great. I hope you let the store know that you liked it, you know, because that's important too. They need
sure.
to hear from
and
people
that. And I
tell
them when I'm there too.
They like
yes,
it. Yeah.
I've made calls to the manager and said, you know, I really appreciate this, and you know, keep it up. You're doing a really great thing, and little girls need to see this type of image out there in front of them.
Great. That's great. Important to do that. Important to support the people who are doing the right thing.
Thanks,
Patty.
As
Pay. Important as protesting those who aren't.
Chris in Stevens Point. Hi. Hello, Chris.
Hi. I'm a photographer, and I've used Photoshop, I admit, and I've had editors use Photoshop to beautify those subjects that I take pictures of, and I know how far they can be changed, and I really applaud Jean on her initiative here. And I would suggest, in order to raise awareness, I don't know if you could legislate it, but I would use the technology against, or turn that around and say, require these advertisers and photographers and so on to post the original picture, unretouched picture, on the internet. And I think folks would gobble it up, and they'd go and be able to see how much each of these pictures was changed. And I think maybe over time, you might have a natural censorship begin there because they could see, you know, how much this particular ad agency changed that person or whatnot. I'll take my comments off air. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
What a great idea. Actually, the MP in Parliament, the legislation is requiring that images be labeled that they were photoshopped. So it's not quite the same as putting the unretouched image up there, but at least it's saying this image, you know, was photoshopped. And that's a step in the right direction. But I love your idea of putting it up on the Internet so that people could go and compare. That would be great. Now, there is one of the Dove campaign commercials called Evolution actually shows how the a pleasant-looking ordinary woman is transformed into a supermodel through Photoshop. And they take you through this in 30 seconds or 60 seconds. Hmm. And that's a real education in and of itself, just this one little spot. And that's kind of along the lines of what you're talking about.
Jean, thank you so much for being with us. It was a great hour.
Sorry,
thank
my dog
you.
Was with us so much.
Oh, I love dogs. It was fine. It was fine. You can go give him a hug now.
Okay.
Yeah, bye.
Always a pleasure, Kathleen.
Yeah, thanks,
thank
Jean. Jean Kilburn, lecturer, media critic, and author. She is the creator of the documentary Killing Us Softly, a film that's been updated some four times, and co-author of So Sexy, So Soon, The New Sexualized Childhood and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show, Chrissy Pease for on-air production.